last week, something really big happened. It was a big deal. I'm not talking about Easter. I'm not talking about the resurrection. It was a really, really big deal. Susan sent me this article from the Washington Post about somebody's life who was absolutely transformed. Now, she sent it to me last week, so this was about a week and a half ago. But a guy named Scott Fisher. Anybody heard that name? It's a big name. You guys are like, who is Scott Fisher? Scott Fisher is just an everyday guy. He lives in Chicago. He's a dad of two kids. Plays a little bit of pickup hockey with some friends. He's a CPA, and he played for Western Michigan University. He played hockey. So pretty basic guy, normal guy. He also is an emergency backup goaltender for the Chicago Blackhawks. And Thursday was a big day for Scott because during practice earlier that morning, their number one goaltender got hurt. Anton got hurt. So then Scott got a call that day and he said, you're probably not going to just be in the press box tonight. We want you to dress up and just sit and do nothing, right? Just sit there. Look like you're a backup goaltender. Early on in the game, their goaltender gets hurt and Scott has to go in. He has to go in to play. Now, as he's going in, nobody really knows who he is. The announcers are going, who is this number 90, right? As he's going in to goaltend. And I think the crowd is pretty nervous about what's going to happen. But all of a sudden, he blocks the first shot. And all of a sudden, the announcers figure out his name. Foster is out there. He blocks the second shot, and everybody is chanting, Foster, Foster. I mean, think about this guy, CPA by morning, by night. Foster, Foster. Everybody is super excited. He takes the team to win 6-2. Never, ever, ever has he played in an NHL game. He takes the team to win 6-2. They give him the team belt for most valuable player. I mean, he's holding it up in all these pictures all over the internet. The internet's going crazy. It's going nuts. Foster, hashtag Foster. Nobody even knows who this guy is that morning. And that evening, everything has changed. His life is completely transformed. Everyone, except for you guys, knows who he is. The world knows him. He is a sensation. And his comment in the Washington Post was this: this is something that no one can ever take away from me. This is something that no one can ever take away from me. I read that. Susan sent it to me, I think, on the Friday morning of Good Friday, right before Easter, and I actually read it when she sent it to me that day, and I said, wow, that line alone resonates with me so much. This is something that no one can ever take away from me. I was thinking about those early disciples, the experience that they had with Jesus. I'm sitting there in that week thinking about Good Friday. Jesus is about to go. He's going to die on the cross, and the disciples have in the back of their mind, even if this is the end of the story, this is something that no one can ever take away from me. This is an experience that no one can ever take away from me. And then I thought about my own relationship with Jesus, my own experiences with Christ. And I said, it doesn't matter what the world says to me. It doesn't matter what people tell me. My experience is something that no one can ever take away from me. The powerful experiences I've had. Now, we talked a lot last week, and I won't spend a lot of time, but we talked about these disciples, how they thought the story was over. Jesus had told them over and over again, these people, these disciples are the people who had walked with him, and he had told them over and over again, the story's not over when you think it's over, but they thought it was over. And it hits them, and they have these really rough moments. What's next in the story? Where do we go from here? These are the questions that they're asking. Now, I'm about to read you a passage from the Gospel of John. And it's important to note, before I read this, that Jesus has died, he has already been resurrected, and he has appeared to the disciples twice before this moment. Okay? Hold on to that piece. He's already appeared to them twice before we get to John chapter 21. It says this: afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee. It happened this way: Simon Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. I'm going out to fish, Simon Peter told him. And they said, we'll go with you. So they went out and they got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, friends, haven't you any fish? No, they answered. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat and you'll find some. When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord. As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, it is the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it and some bread. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish you've just caught. So Simon Peter climbed back into the boat, dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, 153. But even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. None of the disciples dared ask, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread, and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. I love this story. I love that this happens after the resurrection. Meaning the story is not over. Jesus is not done. After the resurrection, Jesus is so cool here. He comes up on the shore and he's like, hey, y'all. What y'all doing? Oh, you're fishing again. Come on. Don't forget. I want to be with you. Come on. Jesus has this very solid moment where he wants to tell them things after the resurrection. He wants to remind them of all that he told them about before. And I think there are some messages, some lessons in this passage for us about what is beyond the empty tomb. Because y'all, you know what the problem with the church is? Sometimes we stop the story at Easter. Sometimes we say, well, Jesus died on the cross and then he was resurrected and that's the end of the story. That is not the end of the story. In many ways, it's just the beginning. Jesus says there is so much more. So what lessons do we get? The first lesson that I think we get out of this story is the past is not the future. Our past is not the future. What do the disciples return to doing? They return to fishing. You might go, Tim, that's no big deal, right? They return to fishing. They return to what they were comfortable doing. They were scared. They were intimidated. Jesus had given them the authority to heal, right? To protect people, to take care of them, to go and share the good news of the gospel. They were given that job by Jesus, and what do? They go back to fishing. In that moment, it's as if Peter looks and says, all right, y'all, that's done. Let's go back to what we know. They go right back to fishing. And there's a part of me that wants to get really frustrated with the disciples, but I think it is a human thing for us to go back to what we're comfortable doing. I think it is very human for us to step back into those things that brought us comfort, especially when we're put in situations that seem risky to us. Situations that may seem uncomfortable. Even after the resurrection of Jesus, even after they had seen Christ twice, they left what they were supposed to be doing and they went back to what was safe and comfortable. Think about it. You think Scott Foster had a life-changing day? Think about these disciples. They had life-changing day after day after day after day. They witnessed these incredible things that Christ did. Powerful, powerful things. The fish. Do you remember the story about the fish and the loaves when they saw thousands and thousands and thousands of people eat because Jesus was there? And yet they go back to doing what's comfortable. I think this happens a lot in our lives. I think it happens a lot that when we're trying to get into transformation and change, we end up reverting back to what's comfortable. Transformation's hard. Would you agree? Change is hard. There's no organization that I know that's been through any major change that says, that was fun. Change is difficult. Change and transformation does not happen overnight. I think about friends who have been alcoholics. right? Friends who say, I'm just going to quit cold turkey. I'm never going to go to a meeting. I'm never going to do anything else. Guess how often that works? Hardly ever. Because transformation doesn't happen overnight. I have people come into my office, someone who has been abusing a spouse, and they say, I promise I'll never do that again. Guess how often they actually are able to live up to that? Because transformation doesn't happen overnight. A community that says, we're going to make this big change, we're going to do this big thing, and as soon as somebody in the community gets frustrated, as soon as it gets hard, guess what everybody does? I'm going back in my house. Because to make that big thing happen, it's just too hard. There's a question that people sometimes ask me, a question that usually comes out of more conservative backgrounds of people, but they'll ask me a question that I really don't like. They'll say, when were you saved? Right? We talked about salvation last week. If you missed that, I want to encourage you to go back and listen to that message. I hate that question because I don't think it was a moment. I have a friend who answers that question about 2,000 years ago when Christ died on the cross, right? When were you saved? For me, transformation in my life has been something that's been happening and is still happening. It's something that's ongoing. It's not an overnight moment where everything was just good and perfect one day and I was fixed and all was right. In my opinion, when you ask that question, when were you saved, it's like asking me the question, when did you figure out how to think? Right? There wasn't a morning when I woke up and I was like, oh, I know how to think now. Right? It developed over time. Our life develops over time. The resurrection is not the end of the story. Christ wants to keep going and keep working. I need Jesus on the beach in my life. I need Jesus to come up on the shore every once in a while and go, hey, I'm still here. I've got you. I've got this. And I need to recognize that it's the Lord. I need that. I was thinking of a way to illustrate this, how I see this story happening for the disciples and how I think about Christ in my life. A few months ago, we had floors replaced on our main floor. Our floors were really rough and we needed to get some new things done. And I moved our wireless router to the basement. Well, you would have thought I stole one of our children from the family. I mean, moving the wireless router, because up on the third floor, you no longer got signal. Right? It was in the basement. You get up to the third floor, especially when you get to my oldest son's back bedroom, there was nothing. And it was horrible that I'd taken away the Wi-Fi signal in our home. So I did what any good dad does. I went on Amazon and I bought a repeater, right? I bought this thing that I could plug in upstairs. And it was $20 or something like that. And I plug it in, and all of a sudden, all is right with the world again, right? We have Wi-Fi. And I thought about it. Christ is sort of like that repeater in our lives, right? The resurrection's happened, but as Christ comes back and we experience Christ in everyday moments, we get that repeater. And the further I get away personally from the source, the harder it is for me to be transformed. The harder it is for me to get the signal. The harder it is for me to experience Christ. And here's the deal. The repeater in my house doesn't move. You know what moves? Me. I once heard a young woman say, well, I was, you know, really good with God, and then God left me, and God came back, and I was like, no, God did not leave you. We step away. That's what the disciples do. They get in a boat, and they go out to the water. They step away from that moment, that thing where Jesus comes and wants them to experience life. Christ acts as the repeater. He's there for the third time after the resurrection to tell them it's not the end of the story. There's more going on. Here's the second thing that I believe we get out of this. When Jesus is present, everything changes. When Christ is present and we respond to that presence, everything changes. Think about this passage. These guys go back to what's comfortable, so clearly they knew how to do it. How many fish do they catch? None. None, because they went back to what was comfortable. Christ shows up, and what happens? The story says this. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some. When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Jesus shows up and they catch fish. The wrong interpretation of this passage in my mind would be for you to think Christ will show up and everything will become perfect in my life. But I'll tell you this. I believe when Christ shows up, everything does change. Doesn't mean that it's all going to be daisies and roses, but everything changes. When Christ shows up, the moment changes. Think about Peter for a second. It hit me this week for the first time in this passage. I hadn't thought about it before because I usually like to give Peter a hard time. But Peter, for the second time that we know of, gets out of the boat. You notice that? There's another story back in the Bible where the waters are rough. Jesus comes out. Jesus is walking on the water, and the only disciple to get out of the boat is Peter. He steps out of the area of comfort into the risky waters because that's where Jesus is. And here we have Peter again. He steps out of the boat. It's as if he cannot wait for the boat to get ashore. He's going to run to Jesus. He is the only disciple who gets out of the boat. It reminds me, there's another story in the Bible of a man named Zacchaeus who was also a tax collector. It worked well with the CPA thing, right? He was a tax collector. And he's so excited to see Jesus that he jumps down from a tree and runs to Jesus. And that's what Peter does. He abandons all areas of normalcy and expectations, jumps out of the boat and says, I want to be with Jesus. Because the story does not end at the resurrection. He knows that when Christ is present, everything changes. It causes Peter to step up and take a risk. That's what he does. But Peter still needs Jesus. Remember, he's the disciple that just a few pages ago denied Jesus even existed. Right, I didn't know that guy. I wasn't with him. So it's not all Peter. It's that Jesus is present and he responds to Christ. Because what Peter knows is when Jesus shows up, everything changes. Y'all, just because the resurrection has happened, just because we in the life of the church have celebrated the beginning of Easter, Easter Sunday, it doesn't mean that the story is over. It doesn't mean that Christ is done with us. I think Christ is constantly calling us when we least expect it. Just like Foster was called to get out of the press box. Christ is calling us to get out of the box. To step out and do something big. And I don't know what that is for each of you. I don't know what that story is. I don't know what your narrative is and what Christ is calling you to step up and say, I want to do this and I want to change this part of the world because I know with Christ it can happen. But what I want to tell you is I believe it's a really powerful thing. And I sit here wondering as I look at your faces, what does Christ want you to do? What's the story for you? What's the thing that Jesus is saying, get out of the boat for, because the resurrection's not the end of the story. I've got more to do with you. I don't know what it is in your journey. But look at what the passage says. Jesus said to him, come and have breakfast. None of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread and gave it to them and did the same thing with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. Y'all, Jesus is not done yet. The empty tomb was not some magic trick. He's not like, ooh, there it happened. Right? Jesus is out of the tomb. He is ready to engage. It's not as if Jesus was saying to the disciples, look, I can overcome death. Now I'm done. What Jesus calls us to is continued relationship. Continue to do something. Continue to get out of our comfort zone. He sits around the table with the disciples yet again. How many times do you think they had that memory with Jesus? He takes them to the table once again. And he says, bring the fish. It's as if this is a great big wrap-up moment with Jesus. He says, bring the fish. And we'll sit around the fire, around the table together. And we'll break it together. And we'll eat together. Because what Jesus knows is that when he invites them into that space, they will experience him again. But I think what he also knows is they won't leave the table exactly how they came. Because when Christ is present, everything changes.